Well, look at that. You made it through another week. And it's Common Sense Ohio right from the middle with all the F-bombs and bunker bombs dropping. We figured we're probably the only show that said that. Maybe. Well, welcome to another week of Common Sense Ohio. Yeah, it's me, Brett Stranger. Been out for like, I think it's a month.
Yeah.
Taking vacation and work and such. So glad to be back.
Welcome back. Yeah, we missed you.
Norm here. Steve out making working for a living. Just put it that way. So that's a good thing.
Taking what he's given.
Yeah.
And working
exactly,
for a living.
Exactly, working for a living. Yeah, we got a lot to cover. Yeah, you know, as we mentioned, F-bomb and bunker bombs. The BBB is back in, well, continues to be in the news, the big, beautiful bill, that is, not the Better Business Bureau. SCOTUS decision on some ICE movements. And we get some local stuff for Ohio, too. Ohio Supreme Court decision on some fetus protection, I believe. But good stuff. Always good stuff. We're going to jump right into it right after this. We're going to hear from our sponsor, Harper CPA Plus.
Are you an entrepreneur who doesn't know when to pick up the phone or get out the keyboard to contact your CPA?
A lot of people are like that. And one of those things that you have to figure out when is the right time to do that is when you feel like you don't know what's going on. How much money am I making? How do I pay my taxes? I'm running my business out of my checkbook and I have no clue what's going on. I don't know if my employees are making me money. I don't know if my products are making money. I don't know which way I'm going. I'm upside down. I can't concentrate or can't think about anything other than where the heck am I, instead of thinking, how do I grow and continue on my business? That's when you should call.
So if you're an entrepreneur and you're looking to have a tax question in regards to that, drop it in the comments and we'll try to get back to you.
Well, I do have to say I was kind of surprised to hear Trump drop the F-bomb. I mean, I think it probably describes his frustration to a T. I think that's ultimately probably why he let it fly.
He was certainly angry.
In regards to the Israel-Iran situation.
Well, when you think of the diplomacy that Marco Rubio, Secretary of State, and these various negotiators from the U.S. Kind of doing this shuttle diplomacy between Qatar, which is the link to Iran, like the emir of Qatar is the person either J.D. Vance or Rubio or these various negotiators go in order to talk to Iran, because Qatar and Iran talk to each other. They're kind of like the pivot person that we deal with. And I think, you know, and obviously he's picking up the phone all the time to Netanyahu of Israel. And yeah, I think he was super angry. It's like, okay, the ceasefire goes into effect in 12 hours. And then it's kind of like the end of World War I, where they fought viciously right up until the armistice. The exact time the armistice went into effect. And it's like, why are you doing that? Why are you killing each other and killing innocent people in apartment buildings or whatever you're doing? Why would you continue to do this? We've negotiated a ceasefire. It goes into effect in 12 hours. And the idea is that's to give you time to tell all of your artillery and bombers and Air Force, you know, you've got 12 hours to tell them to stand down.
All right.
And instead, they took that as like, you know, boom, you know, here.
We've
like
got 12 hours left to go.
It's a bonanza. Let's drop everything.
Let's drop everything. Exactly.
And so that was like, if you have peaceful intentions, right, why would you continue to fight right up until the deadline?
Yeah.
It's like you're trying to maximize the opportunity to hurt the other side. And it betrays, really, that you'd have no intention. To me, I don't think this ceasefire is going to last because clearly they want to still fight each other.
Right. Yeah. And they don't want it to end necessarily.
And I'm not saying they're equally entitled to fight. I'm not saying that morally Iran is equal to Israel. I'm not saying anything of the kind. I'm just saying, you know, if you want to stop the bloodshed, and you've agreed to a ceasefire, then stop the bloodshed.
Right.
Yeah. And so he dropped the F-bomb in addition to the bunker buster bombs and the tomahawks. So, you know, a lot of people, I've been hearing a lot of people, including like Al Green, who tried to impeach Trump yesterday. And the majority of the Democrats in the House voted against his impeachment measure. He only got 79 votes. And even Democrats in the House know this was a judicious and very limited use of American power, and it was on military targets. So these bunker busters basically, you know, blew up the nuclear weapons program, or at least that's what we're hoping is the result. So they would kind of like Top Gun 2.
Mm-hmm.
If you remember Top Gun 2, they put a bomb down the hole to blow up the first layer of underground laboratories. And then in the movie, they dropped, you know, the following planes had to drop another bomb into the same hole created by the first bomb. Well, that's exactly how this bunker buster operation went. They had these B-2 bombers dropping bunker busters into the same hole that the previous bunker. So they, because they penetrate allegedly 200 feet. And the idea is the Iranians had built these labs at 300 feet. So you got to blow up the first 200 to get to the last 100. So it was a very precise, very incredible, and no loss of life to the Americans mission. And then this submarine shot 30 Tomahawks out of one submarine to one of the other targets. So it was just an incredible display, and it was on military targets. And this is after, you know, the guy was, the Ayatollah was given 60 days, and, you know, there were very serious warnings that if you don't sign the peace accord and the agreement to end your nuclear program and the enrichment, then, you know, hell's going to happen. Yeah. And it did. And yeah. So, you know, I'm kind of like, my opinion is Iran has been such a bad actor against our country for 50 years now, almost a complete 50 years. They went into our sovereign territory in Tehran, the U.S. embassy, that sovereign American territory that the embassy is on. It's like if it was right here in America. It's our soil. That's so the Russian embassy in the United States, that's Russian territory. Mm-hmm. So that's how it works in international relations. They went onto our territory in 1979 when Jimmy Carter was president, and they kidnapped American diplomats. I mean, it doesn't get any worse than that. And then ever since then, they've had the 4-H Club, Hamas, Hezbollah, the Houthis, and the hidden cell people. Like when Biden was president, ICE said 1,500 Iranians came over the border, and Biden released half of those. Half were returned to Iran. The other half were undocumented, and they're in the country today. So hidden cell people. And they've been doing this stuff. They blew up the Marines, 281 Marines dead, and they blew up the Khobar Towers. They blew up the embassy in Beirut. They on October, is it the 7th? They Hamas, right? Yeah. They raided an Israeli rock concert and in Gaza. So I mean, these are military attacks. And so when people say, well, you know, why does the U.S. have the right? Well, then I'd say, well, talk to Obama, talk to Reagan, talk to either of the Bushes, talk to Bill Clinton. America has been hitting foreign sovereign territory of other countries to defend our nation for the last, I don't know, 75 years or whatever. And so, like, this is nothing new. You know, we've been doing this a long time.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, and hopefully we're getting close to, well, as we just said, probably not. But it's I don't know whether it's a regime change. I keep hearing no.
I hope the Iranian people rise up.
It has to come from the people, though.
Yes, that's right.
It does.
Because when we did regime change, I mean, America, the CIA, Norman Schwarzkopf's father, who worked for the OSS and the predecessor of the CIA, we know now because of all the records released that the CIA was largely responsible for installing the Shah, who was very unpopular in Iran. And that set up the revolution.
Yeah.
And maybe we should have stayed the hell out of that. You know what I mean? So regime change really is not our, we're not that good at
it. We're not that good at it. No, I mean, we can set it in place, but we don't, it's like a chess game.
Yeah.
I guess you could say that it just, if you don't control the board, it can go south very quickly. And we don't do a good job at that.
Maybe the best examples of regime change are the ones that happened in Germany and Japan after World War II, where, you know, because the Japanese viewed Hirohito as a, they viewed him as a god, right?
Yeah,
they viewed him as divine. And so MacArthur, when he became the administrator of Japan in post-war Japan, we designed the Constitution with Japan. It kind of is mirrored on ours. Women got the right to vote, which they didn't have before, and we left the head of Japan as a symbol in place, even though he didn't have any government function anymore. And then the Japanese people voted, like they could vote a warlike party if they wanted. Just like in Germany, you can vote in skinheads if that's what you want to do, right? Mm. But they voted in, you know, a democratic prime ministers. And ever since then, Japan has been, like Germany, has been an ally of the United States. And that regime change came from within.
Right.
We didn't pick their prime minister and say, this is your guy.
Right.
They voted for him.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Well, and talk about strong economic partners as well, too. I mean, good grief. We've been with generations now of Japan-America relations and Germany. And we were head. I mean, that's an Iran situation. Just like it just changed.
Right.
You know, that nobody thinks of them as the enemy anymore at all. I mean, it was a slow turn, but it did it. We did it. Yeah, exactly.
And so, we even paid to the Marshall Plan, right? We even invested in the future of both of those countries.
Yeah.
So,
now it works. It works.
I think it's got to be organic. It's got to come from the Iranian people. And I think, you know, I think even Obama regrets there was that one period, like 6 months after he became president, where he kind of encouraged, you know, some people call it the Arab Spring or whatever it was. And there was that glimmer of hope that democracy might spread in the greater Middle East. And in some ways, there were some reforms in some countries, like in Egypt and Saudi Arabia. Women got the ability to drive. They didn't, you know, get executed if they didn't have a burqa. You know, like they softened up some of that cultural stuff. But the Iranian people were ready to, you know, throw off the Ayatollah. And I don't know what we were supposed to do. Like we tried the Bay of Pigs with Castro, that was another disastrous regime change attempt.
Yeah.
So you know what was Obama going to do? What, parachute the 82nd Airborne in? No.
Yeah.
So I don't know what he could have done.
Yeah. Yeah. You know. Exactly. Yeah. You have to be at the right time at the right moment.
Yeah.
And Trump may be. I mean, I know this has been discussed as this could be his legacy of a change.
Yeah.
Who knows?
But it's got to come up. Yeah, it's got to come from the Iranian people.
Right. You know, something started the ball rolling, and maybe this is it. You know, maybe. Who knows?
Though the economy, like our embargo and economic punishment on Iran has really, you know, since Trump has taken office, I mean, Biden kind of lifted it, Obama kind of lifted it, but then Trump got elected first term, and he really put the hammer on their economy. And I have heard a statistic of like 45% inflation rate.
Mm.
And so the mullahs are very unpopular with the secular portion of the Iranian population.
Yeah.
Because not everybody there is a radical by any means. I mean, they actually had, under the Shah, they had good relations with Israel. Mm. They were doing a lot of trade between them, and it was not a fundamentalist country at that time. So maybe they'll get back to that.
Yeah, it's hope. Yeah, exactly, exactly. You wanted to take a look at the big, beautiful bill. That's got a lot of moving parts, doesn't it?
No kidding.
That's moving around like crazy, so, lots of different things. And it seems as though Congress has put some stuff in there that really is not budget.
Well,
it's more policy, too. So,
well, the House and the Senate definitely have different versions at this point, and they'll have to resolve that before they can present it to the president, because the Senate, for example, wants to really remove most of the SALT or the state taxes that you can deduct off your federal tax return. The House wanted to be very generous to like California, Illinois, New York, where the taxes are pretty high, and they wanted to make that, you know, like the sales tax and the property tax more. They wanted to raise the amount of the deduction that you can do for that. And Trump kind of is like, well, if that's going to get the bill passed, I'm for it. Because if the BBB doesn't pass, then all those Trump tax cuts that he did in his first term expire. And the tax rates for everybody in every bracket go up. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't want that. I don't think the American people want that. And I don't think the Senate and the House want that. I don't think anybody wants that. But that's what's going to happen. And I think the target is the July 4th weekend for the Senate to get this done and get it presented to the president with all these differences resolved. We are $37 trillion in debt as a country, and this bill does not even cut that much. Unfortunately, the House and the Senate, I mean, nobody wants to be the bad guy. Who wants to be the guy who says that your Social Security is not going to get an inflation adjustment this year, so you're going to have to stick with what you got in 2024? Who wants to be the guy that says to the Medicaid programs in the 50 states that we're gonna cut that back? And one-fourth of Americans are now on Medicaid. And Medicaid was intended purely for poor people and the elderly. And it's now been expanded to immigrants, illegal or otherwise, in many states. And, you know, So imagine you're a congressman. You have to run for office every 2 years, and yet you're going to come out against increases in these programs. So something's got to happen, it's not happening in the big BBB, and it's the DOGE cuts. Most of those are not happening either in the big, beautiful bill.
Right.
So in a way, this big beautiful bill, It tweaks some things, but the big thing it does is it retains the first Trump term's tax cuts.
Right. Exactly. So. Yeah. Yeah. I was kind of surprised. I was hearing the breakdown of the different pieces to it, and that from what I'm hearing, even the BBB has, as I mentioned earlier, more regulatory stuff rather than budget.
That's right.
Moratorium, or I should say, not a moratorium, but a not allowing state and local officials to regulate AI.
Stuff like that.
Like, that's not budget.
Yeah.
What are you sticking in there?
Yeah.
So why are you messing this stuff up? Just get down to bare bones. And
they're chicken. They're chicken to do it.
I think they are. Ultimately, I think, to your point,
they want to get reelected.
We keep complaining about the budget. We keep complaining, or not the budget, but our debt.
The debt.
And somebody's got to raise their hand and kind of go, this is why we say no to this.
This is
why we say no. And come up with a justification that makes sense.
Yeah,
it's got to stop. And they can say, you know what? I know. I'm putting my reelection on the line.
Yeah.
I get it. But this is why you voted me in. This is why it has to happen now, because if it doesn't, the next generation is going to send next two, two, four, six, eight, and we go through another two decades of this crap.
Yeah,
if it has to happen. Raise your hand, grow some nads, and do it.
I totally agree. And if it doesn't happen, the statistics are really like what this is portending for the future generations is truly slavery, because the social safety net, like Social Security and Medicaid and these various programs, you know, the women, infants, and children, the WIC, all this stuff, it will become so lush for beneficiaries that you're going to have, I think now it's a two worker to one dependent equation. In other words, there's two working taxpayers to support each of the people that are on some kind of a program.
And this ratio is not a surprise. I remember hearing this back in the 80s and 90s. They projected this, may not have been in the 2020s.
Yeah.
But they were projecting it. It was going to happen. This is not happen overnight. We know.
And what they're saying is if this continues unaddressed, it's going to be a one-to-one ratio. And what that means is the tax burden on that one worker to support his counterpart beneficiary out there in the population, his tax rate's going to be well over 50%.
So
you're going to have workers deciding, am I better off just laying on the sofa and not working? Like, why don't I receive better? Like, why am I working instead of being a beneficiary? So it waters down people's motivation, you know, to be a taxpayer. Right.
Well, and to clarify where I was thinking too is, and I realize what we talked about, Medicaid and Social Security, those are the biggest piggy banks to look at.
Yeah.
They're the biggest.
And there's a lot of fraud.
But there's a lot of other stuff going on that we can cut that doesn't necessarily have to affect Medicaid as drastically.
Yeah.
As drastically. Well, so let's take, you know, as much as you like or dislike what Doge did, I think it unveiled a lot of stuff that's like, okay, why do we have to have this? Okay, then it justifies. Okay, we do have to have this.
Right.
Whatever the case might be, because it was a yin and the yang kind of thing.
Yeah,
there's a lot of stuff to cut that we don't have to necessarily go deep into Medicaid and Social Security. It's the other stuff that, okay, maybe it's more borne on states.
Well, like the fraud. So there's an Ohio state representative that uncovered something like $600 million in fraudulent payments in the Ohio program alone. So, you know, let's identify, you know, doctors that are doing, you know, spurious billing, hospitals that are double billing, you know, these things that Doge found, you know, if we got rid of the waste and fraud, that is not hurting legitimate recipients of WIC or Medicaid or, you know, come on. I mean, how can people be so afraid to cut down these programs for waste and fraud? You know, like that's basic. That's what we expect from our regulators and from our bureaucracy, is to identify these areas of waste. And it took this Doge experiment to dig all that out. And it's there. Congress can do something if it wants to.
If it wants to.
But they're so afraid. They don't want to be identified as, oh, you want to throw mama on the street and you want to take wheelchair people and throw them over a cliff. And, you know, and you're just going to let people die and rather than paying their hospital bill. No. There's a humane way to do this.
Right. And control the conversation. I mean, talk about the best scenario. If you're in control of the budget, which Republicans are for Congress and, you know, basically Senate as well, too, you're the one that controls the verbiage here.
Yeah.
You know, so find the waste, find what doesn't necessarily hurt the most.
Yeah.
And get it done. At least show that you did, and don't play with the damn numbers.
I think you said it.
Tease them.
I think Brett said it right. You know, get some nads.
Yeah.
Come on. You know.
Just do it. And I'm sorry, kind of sexist.
But well, that's your version of the F bomb.
Just do it. just you know, be the representative that we voted in. And if your cohort, your representatives, the people you represent, said that this is why they voted you in, then go do it.
Yeah.
Right. Go do it.
Right. Yeah. So. Don't disappoint us again
right.
and again.
And again and this, again.
For
decades. I don't care if it's an R or a D. I really don't care.
Right.
Just get it done.
And I always say to my Democratic friends, like, okay, so you want there to be federal support for mass transit. For example, let's just take that. Let's take a small program at the DOT, mm-hmm. mass transit. Well, then if you want to preserve people's support for mass transit, then pick the routes that are most urgent for there to be mass transit. Yeah. Pick the system. Don't build a light rail program like California out in the middle of nowhere that goes nowhere. Build it between, you know, like let's say Fort Worth and Dallas, or build it between LA and San Diego, and get that traffic on trains that are going from point A to point B, or bus routes or whatever. But when you bloat the program and you have empty buses running around cities like Columbus or Chicago, mm-hmm. that aggravates the voters. And then they demand the end of the entire subsidy. And yeah. so some subsidy is a good thing. Some subsidization of state programs by the federal government can be very productive and sure. very good.
Sure.
But you throw out the baby with the bathwater when you just say, hey, I want it to be as big as possible and fund this thing to the point that there's waste and fraud.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what, I mean, that's where the Democrats and the Republicans ought to be working together.
Right.
And they used to. And it's like something has happened ever since, I don't know, Ronald Reagan or Nixon. I don't know. It's become so vicious in D.C. And I would like a ceasefire.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I would like somebody to declare a ceasefire.
Well,
And quit exaggerating that the other person is Satan or Hitler or whatever. And right. let, you know.
Right. Well, and sadly, that national scope of the R&Ds not getting along, not liking each other, trickles down to the state level.
Yes, it does.
And we feel that here because right. you hear the verbiage, you see right. that they're not getting along.
It's ridiculous.
And all that is an example. It's like, well, they're getting away with it. We're going to do it down here.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
At this level.
That's
and
right.
I don't know. It could be down to a city, county level too. Don't know. You don't really, you know, see a lot of press on that. But boys,
well, I think it's
you
there.
See it in Ohio.
I agree with you. And a lot of times people oppose an idea just because it came from somebody on the other team,
yeah.
right? And because because it came out of the other team, it's a knee-jerk reaction that, oh, no, that's going nowhere. And yeah. you're like, well, is it a bad idea? No, it has some merit, but it came from them. And so because it's from them, it's not going anywhere.
Yeah. That's moronic.
That's moronic.
It is.
That is the definition of being a moron.
It is. It is. That you have a great idea. Let's build it up.
Right.
It probably won't be the same thing as it came out of that person's mouth, but at least let's take it somewhere, see where it can go.
Well, let's talk a little Ohio news.
Yeah.
And this is a great example because a bill, what's the guy that came up with the idea that there has to be a performance aspect?
Yeah.
He's a local state.
Bill DeMora.
Okay, Bill DeMora. So Bill DeMora is a very liberal Democrat, but he came up with a dynamite idea that I would encourage my Republican friends to jump all over this. So the state of Ohio wants to give the Cleveland Browns $600 million out of the state's unclaimed funds account. Okay, because people haven't claimed that money. It's sitting there in the bank, if you will, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're saying, okay, nobody's come along for this money, so we'll spend it. We'll give it to the Browns. And Bill's idea is brilliant. He's like, if we give money to a pro team, a privately held team, mm-hmm. like the Browns, the Bengals, the Reds, you know, the Guardians, whoever, the hockey team here in town, the Blue Jackets, whoever it is, if the state of Ohio gives taxpayer dollars, those dollars are to be returned unless the team has a winning record on average over, I think, a three-year period.
He
named a period.
Yeah.
Three or five years
or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. Whatever it is. Yeah. But he's like, you know, if you don't have an incentive to perform, right, why should we fund you?
Right.
And it's kind of like what we tell other private sector, like when Intel wanted money from the state of Ohio, mm-hmm. we told Intel, you have to hire a certain mm-hmm. number of Ohioans.
Right.
Okay. So this is like, you know, a little bit of, you know, you get, it's a term of the contract that, you know, you want our money, then you've got to show that you care about your record. And we saw what happened, say, with the Bengals and the Browns. Of, you know, like if other than Joe Burrow and some really good years, you know, up there, a couple of good seasons with the Browns, those two teams have stunk for like 20, 25 years. Like they've been awful.
Right.
And it's clearly because there's this profit sharing within the NFL that the owners of these teams more or less get paid buku, whether they win or lose. Mm-hmm. It doesn't seem to affect their bottom dollar, except maybe for souvenirs.
Right. But, and they're playing the Bengals and the Browns fans. They're playing them.
They're playing us, man.
You're playing them, basically. And you know, and they're playing our emotions that we don't want, the, you know, because then all of a sudden the Browns ownership's like, well, we'll move. The Bengals ownership, well,
and we
we'll
saw
move.
That, we saw that movie, right? They moved to Baltimore, right? And you know, everybody in Ohio wigged out. And demanded the NFL give the city of Cleveland a new Browns team, and they did do that.
Right.
And so they're throttling us with this subtle threat that, well, if we don't get a new deluxe stadium every 10 or 15 or 20 years, then we're out of here.
And you know what? Go. Go. I mean, and again, I know if I were a pure Browns fan, or I'm not a big NFL. I mean, I love watching NFL. I don't really have a team, but it's mostly if it's an Ohio team, I'll back them and such like that. But you know what? Don't care.
Why should he have to care?
Right.
Right. It's just a sport.
Exactly.
And it's a privately owned team.
Exactly. And it's a stadium that serves maybe 10 games.
Hey,
it's not even a multi-purpose stadium like a lot of them are that they can do concerts in. I mean, yes, you could probably do a concert in it, but I bet they won't. I bet it's like sacred ground that we don't touch this for anything but for football.
So here's the thing. I completely agree with Brett. We have a state that is cutting back on things like school transportation. Mm-hmm. We have schools with asbestos on their pipes. We have
rural areas that don't have hospitals.
We have rural
within multiple county area.
Yeah, and the roads
and
are
that's a really good point. We can't see to spend this unused money to help with frickin' hospitals and medical health in our rural areas.
Right.
We got to help Appalachia area, such like that. But that money's been sitting in there for decades, and all of a sudden, we could use it for football.
There is a list at the Ohio Department of Transportation of decrepit bridges that you and I use every day that are ready to fall down, ready to fall apart. And we've seen in other states where bridges have actually collapsed with traffic on them. Mm-hmm. And yet we've got the largesse to support professional sports out of the taxpayers' pocket.
Right.
It
really can't be justified,
quite frankly. No.
You can say, well, there's an infusion of cash. It's good for the economy. It's like, again, I'm going to say.
We got homeless veterans.
Right. We have eight to 10 home games a year. That's it. It's not even baseball numbers.
No.
Not even baseball
and they
numbers
black
to
out,
this.
They black out the damn TV games in the home city.
Yeah.
Because they got to get on cable and extract more money out of the taxpayers.
And I think it's you know, it's on us to make phone calls.
Yeah.
And just say, no, you're going to give it to them. Okay, put strings to it. I think that ship has sailed.
So Representative Bill.
Yeah, Bill DeMora.
So he knows, I mean, he can read the tea leaves, that they're going to get the money.
Yeah, right.
And so he's saying is, okay, if I get outvoted and you're going to give these people the money, at least make them work for it.
Make them work for it.
Bill, listen, we probably agree on very little, but this is a brilliant idea.
It is. And I think the way he stated it, we'll get off the subject here in a second, but we're talking one game over 500. We're not talking win the Super Bowl.
A winning season.
That's all it has to be.
Come on.
And I know it can be very difficult for the Browns and Bengals to have a winning season. I know that. Exactly. But we're talking one game over 500. That's all we got to do. So rig the schedule maybe, or just maybe have some good coaching going on. Whatever your problem is, fix the problem. Anyway.
Well, so. There was a Supreme Court, U.S. Supreme Court decision, and it affects Ohio. So it's kind of Ohio and U.S. news. And because, as you remember, we had this huge parole group of people, I think, I'm gonna screw this up, but I'm not sure if they were from Somalia or what country, over in Springfield, Ohio. Okay, and it was a large group, and, you know, they were mostly peaceful. And I know people in Springfield that are business people, and they hired some of these people, and they worked great, and they were very reliable and all of that. But at the same time, they drove up apartment rental prices, and there were a lot of accidents because they're not used to driving in urban traffic. And so there were some issues. And then there was the funny meme about they're eating the animals, and we don't need to get into that. But at any rate, under the new administration of Donald Trump, ICE has been trying to figure out ways to return, because a parole program is temporary. They were let in as a temporary measure under Biden. That was the legal, you know, nicety, if you will, of parole, is you're paroled into the U.S. until such a time that we can deport you in a humanitarian way back to either your country or, as Trump is arguing under ICE, a third party country that will take you. And so the Supreme Court got a case where people objected, the plaintiffs objected to the idea that you could deport somebody back to a different country other than their home country. And so, as you know, there's this prison in El Salvador where we have been exporting people and deporting people, right? And Kristi Noem went down there and toured it and all that, you know, all that news cycle. At any rate, the Supreme Court said that is within the president's power and lifted the temporary restraining order blocking him from doing that. So that is a pretty epic decision. That basically, if there's a country that's willing to take a refugee or a criminal, illegal, or whatever category you happen to fall in, if there is a country, whether it's Mexico or El Salvador or Nicaragua or wherever, that the people can go to that other country rather than their home country. So it just helps ICE in their mission of trying to reduce the number of illegals and unknowns that when they're found, that there is a way to get them out of the country and into a situation where they're accepted in another host country, if necessary.
So that other host country, is it a prison there that they're going to?
Not necessarily. No. That's for somebody who's done something criminal.
I'll catch you. Okay.
Other than cross the border.
I'm not trying to pose this question as accusatory. No. Thing. I'm just trying to figure it out.
Sure.
So there's a country that accepts. Are we paying that country to take them in?
In some cases,
okay.
Sure.
Okay. I'm just curious. I don't know. I'm asking. Yeah. Okay.
I'm sure there is
some kind of monetary reward to saying, hey, we don't want them here. They're good people. We just don't want them here because they didn't follow the rules.
And
let's put it that way.
If they self-deport, like somewhere around, Brett, 500,000 illegals, and by that I don't mean criminals. Mm-hmm. I mean not criminals that other than crossing the border, okay? That's the crime they committed. Okay, that's a criminal offense. It's a felony, and they can be immediately turned back at the border. I get that. I'm talking about if they committed a criminal act after they came in, mm-hmm. Okay? Those kinds of criminals, yes, they do go to some kind of detention system, okay, in another country, like that prison where that a Maryland dad, they keep calling him, but the guy who's really a human trafficker,
gotcha,
Garcia guy.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. So because he's a criminal, he goes to a foreign justice system facility. But if it's, you know, a Chinese lady, let's say, that flies into Mexico City, she gets a coyote, she goes over the border, and her intention is to just get U.S. citizenship at some point, and she jumps the line. She hasn't applied for citizenship. She's just crossed the border. So she's committed no other criminal act other than crossing a border. If China, for example, would not take her back, but Taiwan would, or Vietnam would, or Cambodia would, or Korea or Japan would, this gives ICE the ability to deport her back to those other countries that might host her. And yeah, there could definitely be some foreign aid attached to that.
Yeah, I'm just curious. It's all exactly. So,
you
know,
I could see Japan saying, no, you know, don't send us people unless you send, you know, maybe $10,000 to help us support this person for the first 6 months or something like that. I'm sure.
Yeah,
I'm sure there's deals like that.
I suppose so. Yeah, and I hadn't thought about it. So at this moment, it's like, if I'm a country, why would I do that? You know,
right.
It's the same kind of reason why we want them out is because of overpopulation or just whatever the case might be. Yeah,
right.
or some incentives to allow in. So yeah, okay,
yeah,
yeah, okay, yeah.
And for some of these countries, they could view this as just a transit, you know, kind of situation.
Yeah.
So if you deport somebody, say, and their whole family lives in Mexico, but Mexico says no, we're not taking them back. And you send them to, say, Nicaragua, right? That person, once they hit Nicaragua, they have no family. They're probably going to then go to Mexico.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Because that's where their support system is.
Right, sure.
So exactly. it's like a game.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, sure, exactly. Yeah.
Another interesting thing that, again, it affects Ohio, but it's happening on the federal level is the EV mandate in the big beautiful bill is. You know, that is something that the House and the Senate evidently are not arguing about. So the EV mandate's going to be gone. Mm. And what is that doing? So it's pretty interesting. Stellantis, which, of course, owns the Jeep plant in Toledo and other facilities in Ohio, Stellantis is bringing back the Ram 1500 Hemi, a pickup truck, which they canceled. That was going to be an all-electric truck. And now they're going to be, once again, making that model with a V8 Hemi engine in it. GM is expanding their V8 production in the Tonawanda plant. And Ford created this entire city in Chattanooga, outside of Chattanooga, Tennessee, called the Blue Oval City. And Blue Oval City was initially supposed to produce between 500,000 and 1 million EVs a year. And then they found out, only 2 or 3% of the American public is buying EVs, retail customers, mm-hmm. not fleet people, not right. like rental fleets or the GSA government fleets. Mm-hmm. But private individuals are only buying 2 to 3% of EVs, and most of those are Teslas, the majority.
Right.
So, you know, Ford's going to have to do something. Like, they made a major miscalculation, as did almost every American-based manufacturer, oddly enough, except Toyota and Honda, which have not canceled their small gas vehicles.
Right.
They have hybrids, but they also have straight-up gas cars.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can buy a gas Camry, you can buy a gas Accord, and they're selling like hotcakes.
You know, talk about a difficult situation. You're a car manufacturer, and you have regulations that you know that are in play.
Yeah.
And they may not come into play for years to come. So you are making plans to fulfill that new gas mileage that has to be, or the EV mandate, whatever.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden...
A new guy gets elected, and it
it all goes to hell. It just does. Talk about that is one area that I did want to stay away from my career was anything that was government regulated that harshly.
Honestly.
And that's one of them. You know, banking is, but that one certainly is change of the wind. And all of a sudden, it's changed more drastically here in the last couple of decades because of the electric vehicle and battery. That's
back
right.
and forth.
Oh, it's, my gosh.
Their chain is getting jerked.
And yeah. I feel bad for him. But at the same time, it's like, did we really see a future in this 100% EV? I didn't see it. And I'll give a funny example is that, I drive a Jeep and I'm seeing these Jeep EV Wrangler with EV on it. I'm going, that's a misnomer, right? Or an EV Jeep? Really?
It's crazy.
You can't. I mean, we're talking a trail-rated, off-roaded vehicle, and you're throwing ads on TV that, yeah, let's go. Let's go. I mean, I think that's even what the phrase is, let's go, and it's EV. Yeah, you're going to go about 50 miles on a terrain, and that's about it.
There are so many problems with the entire EV concept, and it all starts with the government having its thumb on the table. So right. let's suppose you really have drunk the purple Kool-Aid and you really believe Al Gore and you really believe the sky is falling. Let's suppose you believe all that, but you haven't looked deeper than the idea that, like the Iranian regime change, any big social change like going from gas to EVs ought to come up, right? It ought to be market driven. Right? Just like overturning a regime or just like the election where Obama beat John McCain or Trump beat, Hillary. You know, these are things that have to be done from the ground up.
Well, and it's interesting. And I think
instead of force,
I think Tesla thought about this, but didn't get it done yet, is you can, I think EV would work. Electric vehicles would work if you have the infrastructure that you know you can go anywhere and get charged up.
Well,
because those gas stations don't exist. We don't see them readily. You're concerned about buying an EV vehicle. It's like, okay, but where do I charge it?
Fair enough. Yeah. So under Biden, they budgeted, the federal government was going to construct these recharging stations. And 1,000 of them nationwide. The federal government was going to build these and fund them. And at the end of Biden's term, I think they got 6 of them done.
Damn.
Because there's all this zoning and all that, not in my backyard. And, you know, a million reasons why you can't build something. And this is a perfect example of, you know, private companies built gas stations like Sheetz, and you know, British Petroleum, Shell, you know, Texaco, you name it.
Yeah.
You know, if there is demand. So I don't have any problem against the concept of EVs. Mm-hmm. I have a problem against the forcing by the government and the subsidization of by the government of, you know, you get to take a credit on your tax return if you're one of the lucky people that can afford a $100,000 Tesla, and you happen to be one of the first people in line with the IRS to get the credit. So there's a lot of inequities built into all of this.
Right. Plus the fact they really haven't figured out the tax structure that, you know, you're not eating up any gas. So how are you paying for roads?
Yeah.
That hasn't been well, it has been because you get a surcharge on your registration,
but
which I don't know if it's too much, not enough, don't know. But right. I've been in a couple of car dealers. I know that the last 2 or 3 times that I've had to buy a new car, I've heard stories of people walking away going, I didn't know.
Yeah.
I had to pay more on my registration every year. I'm not buying this vehicle.
Right.
I mean, it came right out of the sales reps. They didn't realize it. But it's not that much, but it's one of those last point of like, okay, no, I'm not.
So my opinion is basically get the government out of the way, right?
Yeah.
Let the market determine. If somebody wants to get an electric Bronco or whatever it is, or a Tesla model number 3 or whatever, they can go buy one, and that's fine. Mm-hmm. I have no problem with that. Go buy an EV to your heart's content if it makes sense to you in your situation. Maybe you live in an urban area, and you commute 50 miles. Mm-hmm. You come home, plug it in, and you're a happy camper.
That's a perfect scenario, quite
that's
frankly.
Fine.
It really is.
And maybe you're well-heeled enough to buy an expensive one with all the goodies, and that's fine too. Mm-hmm. But then there's the new high school graduate, the new college graduate, the single mom. There are people on the bottom end of the income bracket that maybe need to buy a car. And they're not going to be able to afford a brand new EV, but they can slide into a Honda, you know, Accord, a gas Honda Accord for maybe $30,000 or maybe even less.
Used at 17.
That's right.
Yeah. 15.
I mean, there's got to be choices.
Yeah.
And if you don't have choices, you really don't have freedom.
Right.
I mean, if you think about it.
Yeah, exactly.
Where are we on time here?
Oh, we got a few minutes left.
Well, let's talk. So there is this guy in New York City that Cuomo just pulled out of the mayor's race.
Yeah.
And this guy is named Zoltan Madmani, as best I can pronounce
it. I think so, too. I've heard it once. Yeah.
So, hey, listen, he's a flat-out Bernie guy, you know, Bernie bro, and that's fine. New York, you can elect Curtis Sliwa, who's the Republican guy. You can reelect Eric Adams, who's now an independent. Or you can elect Zoltan Madmani. So Madmani has two of these things that just absolutely floor me. One is he believes that the government should run the grocery stores. Okay, that's one of his planks. So he wants New York City to gradually take over the grocery business. And there's nothing more New York-y, right, than going to a deli or a produce stand or a fish market or something in New York.
What aspects does he want to run? Wow, that's interesting.
So his solution to the inflation, which is a real thing, right?
Yeah.
Prices in the grocery stores has gone up.
Sure.
But it's gone up for a variety of reasons, which are complex and largely out of the control of grocery companies. I mean,
and the delivery into New York City.
I mean, come on.
Your prices are going to be no matter what they are in New York, folks. Yeah.
So you know, Elizabeth Warren and many AOC and many of the more Bernie-leaning Democrats have said that it is the fault of private sector greed at the grocery stores for why prices are high. And I think that is logically defeated with any kind of economic analysis of why prices are high. Okay. That's my opinion. I don't have a Thomas Sowell study. The Rand Corporation hasn't, come out with a big, study on this, but I think that's the case. And the idea that New York City or the state of New York could run grocery stores better than the private sector competing with each other for the same customer, right? Like, oh, my milk is $2.59 a gallon, but the guy across the street is selling it for $1.99, so I'm going to match his price. That's how it works.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it works. That's how you get people to come in your store, is by either meeting or beating the price across the street. It's called competition. And the government's not going to do this right. I mean, it's going to be a disaster, and I don't even think he'll be able to even like it's not going to happen, but it shows his mentality.
Yeah.
The other plank, and Brett and I were talking about this before the show, is he wants to keep the police by mayoral policy. He wants to keep the police out of high crime areas of the city. And instead, when there's a call, you send social workers instead of cops. And I'm like, I don't know if I'm getting carjacked. I'm not sure a social worker is going to talk the guy down off the ledge here, so to speak, from taking my car.
Yeah.
Or taking the car with my baby in the back seat or whatever it is. I think I want to see a guy in blue with a badge helping me resolve this.
Yeah, because when you hear those situations, you mostly play that, okay, it's probably a domestic violence situation and those are one of the most out of the words of cops, one of the most dangerous because it's for cops to even walk into.
Because it's emotional.
It's emotional driven.
Yeah.
I could see, a marriage of, having a social worker come along with the cops. The cops settle the situation. The social worker stays in the car until it's cleaned up. Boom, come on up.
Yeah,
I get that.
After it's safe.
The cops don't necessarily want to play social worker. Not everybody has the mentality for it. They're not trained to do it.
That's right.
Let the cops diffuse the situation, know that it's safe, they're in their corners.
Take the guns away,
exactly.
Et cetera. Get everybody sitting on the sofa and say, okay, we've called children's services.
Right.
They're on the way. We're going to stay here to make sure you don't murder each other or us.
Right.
You know?
Right. Exactly. So, I mean, I could see but boy, that's an extreme.
I mean, it's unworkable.
Well, there are no social workers that are going to do that.
No.
They're not going to. Go into one of the most dangerous areas of the city. Probably unarmed. Probably. I mean, that's a look. That's a great optic. A social worker carrying a gun.
Right.
I mean. Come on.
Exactly.
Jeez. Criminy. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. I mean, completely unfeasible. Completely, yeah, you know, just. It's a fantasy to think that would work.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There's a headline I just caught yesterday that the New York Times threw out. Be wary what headline, not necessarily the source, just the headlines. And I caught the opposite of the story in a comment in the thread. So it was the headline is Trump administration to end protections for 58 million acres of national forests. Because they're going to start running roads in, okay? What it actually was that Secretary Rollins rescinds roadless rule, eliminating impediment to responsible forest management. So we can stop forest fires and protect acreage. We don't have these Canadian wildfires going on. It's like,
yeah,
people read the headlines but go a little bit deeper. You might want to actually go to the press release that the agency they're talking about. And again, this nothing against New York Times. It's just extreme twisting of headlines that everybody does. Take a moment, take a breath, really read what was put out there.
And, you know, one of the fact-finding things with the L.A. fires. You know why certain parts of Malibu seem to be burning like every 10 years. We you know, all of the juniper trees or whatever the hell they have out there, the eucalyptus trees, you know, suddenly, you know, somebody throws a cigarette butt or a homeless person's having a campfire, and all of a sudden half of Malibu's on fire is because it's not being managed. The forest and the weeds and the undergrowth, you got to do that stuff or else nature will take its course. A lightning strike in the forest.
Even if it's, by nature, by the hand of God.
It'll burn down, man.
Yeah.
And you've got to manage your forest.
Yeah.
Or else, you know, that you just have, people will die. And they did die.
They did.
In those, in some of those fires in California and in Canada, you know, you have people trapped and they die and firefighters die. It's terrible. And you got to manage that. Either that or you're irresponsible. You
know? Right. I think so, too. And one thing doesn't lead to another. Just because put roads in there doesn't mean it's going to be developed up. It's still protected land. You know, because, you know, the initial headline caught my eye. I got like, well, what's going on here? It's like, oh, okay. This is actually probably a good thing, more than likely, that sort of thing. Yeah, exactly. Want to go over our good and bad, or you got one more thing you want to touch?
Yeah, so yeah. I'll do my winners and, you know, and my sad thing of the week. So sad thing, we did Brian Wilson last week. We talked about, you know, and there was that funny song, you know, that people, several years ago during the hostage crisis under President Carter, people took the Brian Wilson song, Barbara Ann, and they made it bomb, 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 Brian, you know.
About that.
So
jeez.
Brian's, you know, I thought of Brian again, but Bobby Sherman died yesterday, and he was kind of one of those, like, you know.
He was on the cover of a ton of pop magazines, wasn't he?
Yeah, like Tiger Beat.
Tiger Beat, that was it,
for the girls. And he was, you know, he was kind of like, you know, one of those heartthrob guys, Julie, 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 Do You Love Me? And Little Woman, and I'm Into Something Good. And unknown to me until I looked into him, his obit, he worked for the LAPD for like 10 or 15 years and retired as a captain.
Really?
With the LAPD. Huh. So, you know, he was born in 1943, the same year as another epic music icon died or was born, was Sly Stone back on June the 9th. Hmm. So this month we lost him, Brian Wilson, and Bobby Sherman. And before that, you know, we our own guy, Rick from Ohio.
Yeah.
Gosh.
Real name, Rick Zeringer.
Yeah, Rick Zeringer. Rock and roll, Hoochie Coo.
Hoochie Coo, Rick Derringer, exactly.
Rick Derringer.
Exactly. Yeah.
So Sly Stone, Everyday People, Hot Fun in the Summertime.
Yeah.
I Want to Take You Higher, Family Affair, Dance to the Music. I mean, this Sly and the Family Stone were awesome. And really, in some of their songs, like Family Affair, if you know the lyrics to that, deeply intelligent music. Mm-hmm. The lyrics were not always about happy stuff. And like he was nitty gritty. He was a real dude. So
and not a lesser known, but Mick Ralphs, who is a guitarist for Bad Company and the Hoople. He passed away as well, too. And I bring this up because Bad Company will be inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Nice.
He passed away before he could see that recognition.
Is Paul Rogers still with us? The lead singer? I think he is.
Might be. I'm not sure. Yeah. Not sure. But I just heard that connection in an interview yesterday. I'm going, oh my God, talk about timing. I mean, the dude is 80. And that's one band you would think would be already be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. It would be Bad Company. And there's a lot of bands that aren't. And then there are a lot of people that are in there kind of going, they're in there?
Like when they inducted inducted Van Halen, they inducted the David Lee Roth version. And I'm like, well, what about Sammy Hagar, man?
Sammy,
like,
dude,
like you're leaving. Go, what's the deal?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
By the way, speaking as an Ohioan, those doggone ceremonies should not be in New York and L. They need to be in Cleveland. That's where the hall is.
Yep.
Cleveland's a great town.
Yep.
It's a great convention town.
They can pull it off.
Come on, man.
It'd be nice.
You should be doing it in Cleveland.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah,
that's
kind of a poke in the eye, quite frankly.
So my winners of the week, just real quick.
Yeah.
The B2 cruise that went from Missouri all the way to Iran, dropped the ordnance on these nuclear bomb facilities, and then got home. And the submarine that launched the 30 Tomahawks. Those men and women of the Air Force and the U.S. Navy, hey, you're the winners of the week, man. You guys got it done, and hopefully the world is a safer place. You know, even if Iran tries to rebuild, you've set them back years. And so thank you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. A win this week. We've all been touched by Alzheimer's, and I just caught the story this week. There's a new blood test for Alzheimer's that is 95% accurate at detecting people with early symptoms.
Wow.
That's huge.
That's huge.
That is huge.
And there are treatments, I hear, coming.
Yeah, yeah. So that is you know, every family's been touched by Alzheimer's.
Oh, my.
Everybody. And that is an ugly, ugly ending. It just truly, truly is, because, as we all know, it turns a person into someone that doesn't know. And they're unrecognizable to us. You know, you just don't have the relationship anymore. But we can get close to that. But I just saw them going, that's great. I mean, we got to get close to that. I think that's a win, and boy, let's roll with it. Let's get it done.
And if you can do, you know, Sudoku or take a drug or undergo some kind of therapy, hey, earlier the better.
Yeah, exactly. Know? Exactly. Cool. Well, good. That does it for this week. Thank you for joining us. Thanks to Harper CPA Plus. The three Amigos should be back next week, I'm assuming.
Knock on wood.
You know? So, yeah, well, summer will probably settle things down a little bit for us. But work calls and vacation calls, everybody understands that. So thanks for joining us. It's Common Sense Ohio, right from the middle until now.